If patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel, then party loyalty must be the last bolt hole of the damned. If 16 murders, 25 rapes, and an armed bank robbery every week since 1952 were confessed to by an MP, it would still provoke less outrage from colleagues than his announcement of changing party allegiance. Even to vote against one's party is seen by MPs, some of them almost grown men, as an act as unnatural as the Women's Institute denouncing motherhood. A betrayal of galactic proportions. After all, when Judas betrayed Jesus, wrong though it was, at least he wasn't disobeying a three-line whip. So, in the cloistered world of the MP, where sin is to say no to a manifesto subclause, it is small wonder, except to the rest of the human race, that the act of leaving a party produces a tribal response that would not be out of place among New Guinea headhunters. This criticism should not be thought a further example of narrow partisanship, for just about the only quality shared by politicians of all persuasions, not to say intimidations, is their effortless mastery of kindergarten abuse towards erstwhile colleagues. Only Churchill, politics' 20th century vicar of Bray, escaped lasting calumny, and he needed a war. In the creed of the party faithful, united we stand, divided we throw a tantrum. And the hapless social democrats are just the latest to suffer for the belief that now is the time for all good men and women not to come to the aid of the party. No doubt, amongst defectors, there are sometimes opportunists, a breed naturally anathema to all other politicians, who wouldn't even know how to recognise opportunism, unless there was something in it for them. But what is bemusing about the charges of opportunism levelled at this recent breakaway faction is that they are coupled, usually simultaneously, and from the same mouth, with a forecast of instant oblivion. It is rare in human history for an act of harakiri to be described as overweening ambition. But then a politician's capacity for rational invective seems to disintegrate when faced with the shock horror of a political act dictated by conscience. And so the defectors are charged both with doing irreparable damage and being quite insignificant. More appropriately, they might be charged with bringing politics into repute. What is most revealing of all is that the bizarre idea that politicians might act from principle has scarcely crossed the minds of the Right Honourable Gentleman. Indeed, there appears considerable confusion as to what exactly principle is. For example, the proud boast of the left is that they never abandoned the Labour Party, even though it meant a lifetime spent loyally supporting the hated policies of the right. Let us leave aside the small historical problem of them having had nowhere else to go, rather like stowaways on a cruise liner claiming credit for not throwing themselves overboard into a shark-infested sea, and let us instead take them at their word, because it is of far greater interest that their proud boast raises a definition of integrity never previously submitted to the Oxford Dictionary. Since when has a lifetime of active support for values held to be repugnant and policies believed to be disastrous been a matter of pride? Who, outside the Labour Party, would share this view? Answer: the Tory Party. As month after month of Britain's decline goes by, with the only hope of economic salvation being a takeover bid by Nicaragua, we are constantly told that Tory backbenchers, almost to a man, there not being many women, are deeply worried. As the prospect grows of British industry soon consisting solely of one shoe shop in West Bromwich, we are even more constantly told that Tory backbenchers and frontbenchers have no confidence in government policies. As the effect of monetarism on our society makes the Luftwaffe look increasingly like a charity organisation, we are ceaselessly told that the backbenchers are up in arms, until finally, with anger and outrage awash through every fibre of their beings, they take the only course open to them and vote, almost to a wet, in support of the government's economic policies. One day, a cabinet ought to put forward a motion proposing that the population be used to test germ warfare methods, just to see if there's anything some members wouldn't support. Historically, those who cross party lines are always accused of double-dealing, backstabbing, deceit, betrayal, ingratitude, arrogance, cowardice, treachery, and virtual treason. What is bizarre is that in the normal course of political life, these are much sought-after adjectives of praise, a sure sign that a member will go a long way in a world where for every Caesar there are 200 Brutuses. The real crime of the accused is failing to employ these virtues on behalf of the party and furthering their own lack of self-interest. Macaulay knew of no spectacle so ridiculous as the British public in one of its periodic fits of morality. That was because he had never witnessed the much rarer spectacle of British politicians suffering a fit of morality, almost a contradiction in terms. A moral politician is like a dog walking on its hind legs. It is not done well, but the miracle is that it is done at all.